we would then receive the today. So before we start the meeting, I'm going to hand over to Honorable Dodovo for him to take us through the process. Thank you.
Yes, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm going to be very quick. That as per our decision yesterday in a meeting, that today I will brief members about what is going to happen in the House. I'm going to do exactly that. As you are aware, in the House today at 2 o'clock, we, as per the program, we expected to present the statements on the 139 invocation in the Northwest Province. And based on the legal advice we obtained and based on our further consultation, we are not going to proceed with the tabling of the reports, but the chair of the select committee will be afforded 10 minutes in the House to sketch out the background about what happened and the fact that we are not going to proceed with the tabling of the reports, given the legal issues and litigation processes that are unfolding on the matter. That is the only thing that is going to happen in the House next.
Honorable Dodovo, am I chairing?
Yes.
Okay, Honorable Mikolakis, I see you've raised your hand.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I just have two concerns, but quite frankly, it is for the committee to decide. I've made my position yesterday very clear. The first one would be that feedback to the council, whether it is a formal report adopted by the committee or otherwise, should, in my opinion, I may be wrong, should be formally ATC'd. That has not been done. That's my first concern, and it's perhaps something that you should just look at. The second thing that I'm very concerned about is that every day, if I am correct in my opinion, which was in line with the legal advice of yesterday, that the administrators have been appointed irregularly, every day that the NCOP actually takes longer to indicate that these interventions were irregular is a day extra that someone is in a position that they should not. My opinion would simply be that we continue taking the advice of the legal advisor yesterday. The quicker the process can start over, the quicker it can be done in terms of the law and actual business of the municipality, which is to make a difference in those administrations, can start quicker. So I would just like the committee to keep that in mind, because it is a risk. If you wait another month to make a decision on that, it's another month that an administrator who wasn't allowed to be appointed in terms of the law has been in his position. It's got implications for all the decisions that they take in the next month. It's got implications for all the expenses that there are in the next month. So it does have implications for us as a committee on our decision. The last thing that I just want to say is, if Naledi comes to an end without us making a decision as a committee, obviously then the intervention lapses by implication of what the Constitution actually determines. So those are just the things that I would like to ask the committee to keep in mind, because I am very, very nervous that we might fall into the trap of being complicit then in the mistakes of the MEC. It's one thing to appoint administrators outside of a determination in terms of the law. Whether the MEC knew it at that time or not is not relevant to us. But it's a completely different matter for the committee, being well aware of the judgment, to then actually prolong the ending of that irregular process for another 3 weeks or a month or whenever we come back. And that is the part that I have a big problem with. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Media.
Thanks, Chair. Let's appreciate the brief by the chairperson of the committee. And I would like also to align myself or as to agree with the approach that the chair is outlining. And I also want to remind the committee that yesterday we had a presentation from the official of the department. And if you recall, one of the things that the official of the department said, yes, it was Section 100 to Northwest Province, but with conditions. So in whatever we say, we must take note of the fact that as this committee, we are not privy to those conditions that he was referring to. So I would urge the office of the chair to please get closer to the department, because I'm partly agreeing with the fact that as we prolong the issue, the decisions are being taken. And I understand the fact that we delay this matter. It is because we're still waiting for the court outcome. We cannot run before it. So the sooner we get our facts straight in terms of the department and the maybe the reasons or rationale behind them in appealing to the matter, because it may happen there are issues around the conditions that were set by the executive. That's my input, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. Honourable Goya.
No, no, thanks, Chair. I'm partly covered by the Honourable Minister. Because the issue that I was going to raise was that we must not be one-sided when we look at this thing. Because our main focus now is only on the judgment and the advice we got from the legal person who advised us, not knowing that there's a second side to the story, which came from the department. So we can't, at this point in time, be seen to be implementing or complying to a judgment that is being challenged. Because the judgment as it stands is being challenged. That is why the chairperson is clear to know to raise the matter. That, and we can't pretend as if we have not done work. We've done work, we've gone to the province, we've gone to those municipalities, we've listened to what the people are saying. And we were going to take a decision on the basis of the work that we have done. But because the work that we have done, we only got information yesterday that there is a judgment. But that judgment is challenged in court, which means the judgment can't be enforced if there is still a process to challenge it. So I think the approach that the chair is raising indeed is the correct approach. And we've got nothing to fear here, because we are neither saying we agree or we disagree. The point we're raising is that work has been done and we have a report, but we can't table the report to plenary on the basis that there is this legal process that is taking place. So I should think that is a matter that we should be taking into consideration. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. Any other honourable member? Honourable Teta?
Simple, my Chair, let's close this matter. You've got the report.
Can you use the mic, please?
The simplest way, Chair, is to close this matter before we reopen the debate on it. Thanks for the appreciate the report that we have received. We will take it as the time goes on. But for now, let's close it and let's do exactly, we approve the recommendation of the approach in the House. Thanks.
Thank you. I think on that note, Honourable Dodowo, do you want to...
My last word is just that we have sufficiently consulted with all the players to arrive at this decision, and all of us are expecting are really, really concerned about the deteriorating situation in our municipalities, which require our intervention. Thanks.
Thank you. I wanted to rule that the matter is closed.
Chairperson, I'll be quick. I would just like to request that our dissenting view be minuted. Thank you very much.
Okay, that is not out of order, so it's fine. Okay, all members, I think we're done with the copter matter. We'll now move on to the business of the Select Committee on Security and Justice. Our colleagues from SAS, thanks for bearing with us over the last 10 minutes. But essentially, honourable members, we've received a notice from the minister where the department is requesting a firearm amnesty, which is in line with Section 13 of the Firearms Act. Honourable members, I think before we go into the business, I will want to request, find out if there are any apologies, and following that, just request members of staff to introduce themselves to this meeting, and then we'll take it from there. Thanks. We did receive three apologies from the department. The minister and the deputy minister sent an apology. There is a executive committee that are meeting on Wednesdays, and I think as members, I think we always raise this issue that meeting on Wednesdays sometimes clash with the executive's program. But the commissioner as well was unable to be with us today, as he's also in the Eastern Cape today. So I'll request then members from SAPS to introduce themselves. I'm not sure who's leading the team. Meh, you can take over next.
Honourable Chair, honourable members, good morning. I'm Lieutenant General Jasper. I'm the Acting Divisional Commissioner for Visible Policing. With me, I have next to me Major General Mamotete, who is a component head for firearm liquor control and second-hand goods. Next to her, I've got Major General Arendsen, who is from DPCI, and we've got our parliamentary officer, Colonel Spain, on that side. So I'll be leading the team today, Chair, in terms of the presentation. However, the presentation will be done by the Flash Commander, Major General Mamotete. You've already indicated what the purpose of the session is. So she will just, that the Minister has announced in the state in his budget vote that he would like to declare an amnesty, and this is where we are now. So she will speak to the background briefly, just to give the legal background specifically, and then looking at the objective and then the implementation phases. We've got five phases of implementation, under which one, the first one would be planning, and under planning we'll look at the state of readiness specifically, and then the process flow, which I think which the committee would find interesting. We look at the execution phase, the reporting and monitoring, the destruction, and the debriefing. Those are the five phases that we will inform you. And then we've done a risk analysis, so we'll speak to the risk and the mitigation thereof. So with your permission, Chairperson, if I can hand over to General Mamotete, who's going to do the presentation for us.
Thank you. I see you already went into the presentation. Let me not stop you. You may go ahead with the presentation, but in essence, honourable members, we're receiving this presentation because in terms of Section 1392 of the Firearms Control Act, we required as Parliament to approve such an initiative. Honourable Nicoletti, did you want to say something before the presentation?
Yes, please, Chairperson. I just want to make a comment that in the previous Parliament, we stood quite firmly on the fact where the executive members or their deputies do not come to the committee. Surely it comes in with planning. I know specifically the staff of this committee is excellent. They get invitations long before. And if the one has to be at a cabinet meeting, then the other needs to come. I think specifically with regards to this briefing, it's not the end of the world, but I just want us to caution that the department to send the a message to the minister that this is not setting a precedent, because I'm just scared if we carry on with this without sending that message, that at the next meeting and the next and the next, we would be sitting here only with the department and no one to hold politically accountable. Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, thanks for that, Honourable Mitsotakis. I agree that the state of affairs is not okay, but it's also something we're going to be considering at times swapping days with COPTA, so that on Tuesdays, if we're really desperate for the ministers to be present, we will make sure we don't hold our meetings on a Wednesday and make clashes with that of the executive. But be that as it may, you may continue with the presentation. Are you going to present, or are you using
the document? Yeah, it's okay.
But we do have the document.
Okay. Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, thank you very much for the opportunity. As already alluded by the General, I'll be presenting to you the draft notice of the declaration of amnesty in terms of Section 1039 of the Firearms Control Act, but also to include in the presentation the processes that we have also put in place to ensure that we are kind of ready when the amnesty is approved by Parliament. So in a background, we're speaking about the same section, which is Section 139, Subsection 1, which provides that the Minister, by the notice of the Gazette, may declare an amnesty if that amnesty may result in the reduction of the number of illegal possessed firearms in South Africa and is in the interest of the public to do so. So on the basis of the current states where the firearms are mainly used as an instrument, especially on the serious crimes, we can safely say that we have realized that there is more of illegal firearms that are actually circulating in the country. Also taking into consideration what is happening now within in Western Cape around the gangs, the firearms are being used in that regard. So that is why we're saying it's at the interest of the public, and also it will actually assist us in reducing the illegal firearms. The same section, subsection 1, also provides that such amnesty will only be valid if it's approved by Parliament. Hence, we have all these processes that we have to go through. The Section 138 of the same Firearm Control Act regards amnesty, or define amnesty, as an indemnity against prosecution of unlawful possession of firearms and ammunition. In that regard, it states that if the people bring in the firearms voluntarily to the police, they will not be prosecuted for unlawful possession. But however, on the issues of the crimes which has been committed by those firearms, they will not receive the indemnity thereof. So in the same regard, on the same section 139, subsection 4A, the people who have the history of the ownership, or who can be able to prove the history of the ownership of that firearm, they can still be able to apply for the licensing of those firearms that have been surrendered to the police. We have been going through this process since 2017. Unfortunately, due to the changes, we could not be able to finalize the process, but however, we have put in the project plan in place with a proposal that the firearm amnesty run for six months period from the 1st of October this year to the 31st of March 2020. We have also established a steering committee that will be sitting to monitor the process as during the implementation. The objective mainly of the amnesty is to reduce the number of legal possessed firearms in circulation in South Africa, as I alluded, to provide firearm owners with the opportunity to hand in unwanted firearms, because sometimes you have the firearm of the disease, sometimes people, they have firearms, they feel they no longer need that firearm. This is the opportunity that they can bring them, to prevent crime and violence and to promote safety, to address the fundamental causes of crime in order to effectively protect our community, to ensure people live in South Africa feel and have no fear of crime. That is another aim or another objective that we want to achieve in regard to this one. So the spaces, as the General has indicated, is appearing there. During our project planning, we had all the spaces to ensure that we constantly monitor and ensure that there's effective implementation in that regard. The planning phase is when we sit down and said, but what is it that we have to put in place to ensure that we are ready if and when the amnesty is approved by Parliament. We have established a steering committee which is consisting of all the relevant stakeholders, as I've indicated, and we have a work breakdown structure that we are working on. We also have issued the instruction to the provinces to conduct the assessment and identify the stations that will be excluded in the in this project. Previously, we had some few of the stations that were identified, but because of the lapse of time, we said we let us give them an opportunity that they can go back and do the assessment because of the attacks and other challenges that we have also identified, that we have some of the stations being excluded. The implementation process flow, we have drafted the process flow and the guidelines that will assist the people at the lower level to be able to run with the project. I will come to the process flow when I present the process flow when I come to that one. We also have developed the transportation plan for the firearms. Actually, the guidelines that will say how the firearms will be transported from point A to point B. We also emphasize the screening and the vetting of the designated amnesty officials and SAP 13. Those are the people that will be directly dealing with the amnesty firearms. And we also have put in the criteria for the appointment of such personnel. And identification of the centralized storage facilities. Because of the risks associated with the firearms, we have identified in each province the centralized storage where the firearms will be stored and secured, so that we don't have them getting lost at the police station. We also have developed a checklist in that regard, which will actually guide the people that will be dealing with the amnesty. So in total, we have a total of 9 centralized storage facilities, which were identified at the provinces, mainly to say each province has 1 identified centralized storage. But besides that, we also have the contingency plans in terms of the flow. If maybe the centralized storage is full, we're going to be using the strong rooms at the police station, which have secured security in that regard. Still on the planning phase, we also have developed the communication plan, which is ready for implementation. The communication plan will be in the phases, the pre. Before then, the implementation, there are some activities that will be done, and during the implementation, there will also be some activities, and after the implementation, after 6 months, we will also be able to go back to the community and come back to the select committee if so required to come and talk to the amnesty itself. We have also registered some code on the system so that we can be able to trace on how many firearms have been surrendered during this amnesty, where they will be captured on the relevant system as an amnesty project for us to be able to account in terms of how many firearms have been handed in. We also have added the additional guidelines on how these firearms should be distracted. The designated firearm officials also will, because then we want a situation where the firearms should also be undergoing a ballistic testing so that we can check whether some of the firearms have been utilized for the commission of crime. So in that regard, because we know we don't have a forensic labs in all the provinces, we're going to be training some of the members who will be dealing with the IBIS testing, mainly being done at the provincial level. We also have made sure that the details of those members that will be dealing with the amnesty is given to the crime intelligence for the purpose of screening and vetting. We will also activate the teams from the detectives for those firearms that have a positive link so that they can start with the process of investigation. And if that during that investigation, it is required for them to escalate that investigation to the DCI, they will do so. In the previous years, we already have done 2 workshops in that regard, just to workshop our commanders to have an understanding. But now, because of the lapse of time, we're going to have another workshop tomorrow with the commanders, just to refresh them in terms of what workshop previously. So that is the process flow that I'm going to quickly run through. We have tried to summarize, but in the guidelines, is in detail. Where we say the owner will come in the CSC and hand in the firearm. And once he hands in that firearm, he will complete the 522A, which is the form that is the surrendering form. And the 522B, if that person is intending to forfeit the state, the firearms to the state. So if that person is not intending to have that firearm forfeited to state, he wants complete state. But then the person has a time period of 14 days to apply for the license within 14 days. That is another process that will occur in that. So once the forms have been completed, there will be some entries at the OB and as well as the SAP station that will then mark the SAP station as a surrendered firearm. And then they will complete a 498 in triplicate. The 498 is actually the acknowledgement form that we have just designed specifically for the amnesty. The owner will be given a copy. One copy will be put in within a bag with a firearm, and the other copy will remain in the register. So within that 14 days, we say the firearm should then be transferred to the central storage facility, which is identified in the province. And in that regard, they have 7 days to conduct the testing in terms of forensic ID testing. And if during the testing it is positive, the heat is positive, then we activate the detective. And if the heat is negative, then they must give the report to SAP, to the police station, so that they can file that document. However, the firearms will remain at the storage facility up until the end when it's going to be destructed. So the other processes is the exhibit part where the DFO at the police station will have to capture the firearm on the EFR system, also to trace the ownership and trace whether the firearm belongs to us, because some of the firearms, they don't belong to this country. If they don't belong to this country, we have an Interpol system where we're supposed to also circulate those firearms, which is the IARMS. So after that, then the process will unfold and the administrative part will go to the provincial level, and where they will also have to capture them. And then they will transfer it into the relevant department from the EFRS to the relevant code within the EFRS. Up until then, it comes to head office where we're going to do the verification. Before then, we can be able to finalize the processes for destruction. That is the process that we have put in place in short. So during the implementation, we're talking about the implementation of the communication, both internal and external, as I've indicated that we already have a plan. And then we will also have to issue the NCCF instruction that will communicate the implementation on the process flow as well as the checklist. And we also have to have the task team, like I've indicated that there will be some of the community members who feel they need to apply for the firearm license of the same firearm that they surrender. They are allowed to do so in terms of the act. So we will put the teams in process that will actually be dealing with the processing of such applications we do receive. And we also have to establish an inquiry desk at the firearm registry where people who are having some queries, they can also be able to access us and activate the detectives. On the phase of the monitoring, we will implement the reporting template for the monitoring purposes. We also have designed the monitoring template. We also have the monitoring teams that will be going around where there is a red flag in terms of the reports that we're receiving to conduct the quality assurance. We will also on a daily basis generate and analyze the reports that we're receiving from the provinces, and then monitor amnesty firearms sent in, especially those firearms that have been linked, so that we can have a proper investigation thereof. So the first phase is that once everything has been done in terms of the act, we're supposed to destruct the firearm within 6 months after the recovery. Then we will finalize the process of having those firearms being destructed. And before we can destruct, we know we have to compile the firearm destruction an audit report, and also do the gazetting thereof and update the EFR system so that they can reflect in our system to indicate that they have been destructed, and thereafter compile the destruction reports. The last phase will be the debriefing thereof, where we're supposed to have a debriefing on the project itself to assess the impact, whether we have been able to achieve the objective as outlined, and we conduct the debriefing sessions at all levels, meaning at the provinces as well as the stations, and thereafter we will have a consolidated report which will be submitted to the relevant authority in terms of the same project. When we were busy with our project, we have identified some of the risks and we came up with a mitigating actions that can actually assist us. There were issues that normally they will be raised around the theft of firearms. So the process flow as outlined, it will assist us in making sure that we mitigate the theft of firearms, because we won't have firearms that are going to be staying long at the police station. They will be staying at a centralized storage, and we don't want movement which can actually hamper the processes, but also taking into consideration that we also have put in some processes on the transportation thereof. The vetting and the screening of the people that will be dealing with the firearms also is the one that we put in to mitigate the identified risk, and also ensure the measures and accountability within the SAP 13, because we don't want the firearms that will get lost from the 13 storage. So we will make sure that there is accountability measures on daily basis to check on that one. Where we requesting on daily basis, how many firearms have been handed in, where are those firearms, so that we can trace them. The damage of firearms, the identified storage that we have identified will actually assist, because there's enough space and they will be properly packed so that we do away with overcrowding. The delay in ABIS testing, we have realized that because we don't have the laboratories in all the provinces, but we have identified, that we have requested the provinces to identify people that will be trained. And already we are getting the list. The training will be starting in 2 weeks' time. So if we have those, then the issue of the IBs will be quickly done. Inadequate security and attacks on police, yes, we can acknowledge that there has been some incidents where the police stations have been attacked. But we have, however, issued a directive in that regard, which talks to the minimum standards criteria for the police station in terms of the security. That will talk to also the access control with regard to, in terms of the initial instruction 17 of 2019. We also have an enhancement of a security and central storage facility that we will take care of. We also have given the provinces a directive to continuously conduct the risks assessment, because the risks, they will always be there, but they should always make sure that they conduct their risk assessment. On the other side, we're saying we will also communicate the operation hours, because we don't want a situation where people will come at 10 p.m. or 10 in the evening to come and hand in the firearms, knowing very well that there will be few members in that CSC who will attend to the complaint. So we'll talk to the operating hours, but also taking into consideration the issue of service delivery. The transportation on the attack during the transportation of firearms, we have the plan in place. It's in detail on who's supposed to be there, and also again the risk assessment must continuously be conducted. The increase in the number of applications, as I've indicated, because we are envisaging that we might have a number of people that will be applying for the licensing of those firearms. We have decentralization of fingerprints, because before you can license a person, they must be fingerprints. The fingerprints will be done at a local provincial office, and then at the central firearm registry, then we have a task team that will be sitting only to deal with the processing of such application. So that is basically, in short, in terms of the processes that we have put in place, in place, but we believe that if we can put in place this amnesty project, or the we can have the approval of the amnesty, we will be able to remove some of the illegal firearms in the country. Because as I've indicated, the statistics indicate that the firearms are mostly or commonly used as a as an instrument in the commission of crimes, especially the violent crime. So in order to ensure the success of the 2019 amnesty, it is imperative that all the South Africans be involved in this project to ensure that all the people in South Africa are feel safe. Thanks, Chair President.
Thank you, Matt, for that presentation. I'm going to request honourable members to raise issues if they have on the presentation, as well as to raise issues for clarity. If I can get an indication on who wants to interact with the presentation, I'd be honourable Mateo to our honourable Mikalakis, honourable Mola, honourable Goya. Oh, and Dido as well as Mita. I think we'll take it in that order. Thank you. Honourable Mita.
Thanks, Chair. I see this amnesty, therefore the presentation is well crafted and summarized. It talks to a number of issues that is pertaining to the community out there. But man, I still see a gap. There are people that in the past, officer, who used to get the green card when they had licenses. I mean legal, people who are holding them, they've got the legal license. It was green, then it was changed to a card. Others did not change. They remain on the old card, but they've still been recognized as they are having a legal license. Those that they complied and changed to the card system, when you are late with a month to renew, they were not allowed to renew their license. Those that have complied to the card system. How are you dealing with that? And when are those people, because these are the citizens that have complied with all the laws. For 1 month delay, not renewing your license, those people were said, no, you can't renew it now, hand over your firearm. And with those firearms in the police station, they get missing, and a number of things happening with those firearms. For the people that have applied legally, so just for a delay, how are you dealing with those issues? And when are these people going to be given amnesty to go and renew their firearms license? Because they are legal. Gotcha.
Thank you very much, Chair. I have a few questions. The first one would be that for the firearms amnesty to be successful, you would have to go a very, very long way in building trust with the public. How have you gone about that? Because quite frankly, to say that you have centralized storage and accountability measures will be in place, by the time you check by the end of the day whether all the weapons are there and some of them are missing, what are you going to do then? I would also like you to refer to issues in the past. Now, if I can quickly say, I believe that the last time that there was a firearms amnesty, a big chunk of the firearms actually got lost. One of the senior police staff members who sold these firearms, I believe his surname was Prinsler, is still currently in jail. I would like to know what you've specifically learned in the practice of the deadly mistakes that you've made in the past. What exactly happened over there, and how will you make sure that you avoid the repetition of this? So that's the one part. But it also links to building public trust. Then specifically the CFR, it's not, to say that it's not without challenges is an understatement. And it is also central to the success of such an amnesty. what are the current challenges faced there? What's the current operational status of the CFR? And how are you going to ensure that, that these issues do not affect, in the end, the success of the firearms amnesty? My third question, Chairperson, relates to the how the moratorium on the intake of firearms is going to affect this amnesty as well. That's the court case, the interim court case of the gun owners of South Africa, and the commissioner in the end placed that moratorium, as you know, on the intake of firearms based on this case. How is that going to affect the success of this operation? I also have concerns that every single time when firearms amnesty is called, the firearms that end up being handed in at the police station is the ones of ordinary, honest citizens mostly, who have forgotten to renew their license. You don't really get a hardened criminal coming to say, here's my gun. So I have major concerns with this because I'm not quite convinced that firearms amnesty actually brings down the crime rate in the way that, that it is being sold to us. And I would like to have your comments on that. In my opinion, and this is where I end off, Chairperson, in my opinion, the loopholes in the Firearms Control Act should actually be looked at. Those loopholes should be closed. And when you ready, after those loopholes have been closed, then to call for an amnesty on firearms. But I'm not convinced, and I hope that you will be able to at least put my mind at ease to some extent, but I'm not convinced that calling for an amnesty under these circumstances, where the police is clearly not prepared to actually achieve what they would like to, would actually bear any fruit. So why aren't these things first in place before you call for such an amnesty? Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Mohler.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for your presentation. In slide number 4, you said no indemnity for firearms used to commit crimes such as murder, robbery, and hijacking, etc. What do you mean by that? My second question is slide 4 again. Project plan for firearm amnesty for the period of 1 October to 31 March 2020. If I remember correctly, Chairperson, last time we were having a problem with the stolen firearms in some of the provinces because they send in their firearms but were stolen. So how are you going to make sure that it cannot be repeated? My third question, in slide 7, you are talking about the... Let me open slide 7. In slide 7, you are saying provinces to conduct risk assessment and identify stations to be excluded in the project before 15 September. Today is the 11th of September. How many provinces have conducted the risk assessment and how many stations were identified? Because you said before the 15th, today is the 11th. My fourth question, you said 9 centralized storage facilities were identified in provinces. How are you going to make sure that those storage facilities are secured? Because your own police are stealing these firearms and selling it to the gangsters. My fifth question, details of members were provided to crime intelligence for screening and vetting. Is the process of screening and vetted started? The other problem that we are having seen in the last system was the training of the DFOs and the sub-13 members. Is this training conducted? Another problem that we are having is the filling of subs 522A and B. Have you done the training for members? Because there was a lot of problems, your members not knowing how to fill in that form. My last question, Chairperson, is in slide 10. Established inquiry desk at the Central Firearm Register, CFR. In the last 15, Chairperson, we went on an oversight at the CFR offices. What I can tell you, Chairperson, it was a mess in that office because three members were sharing an office. There were no spaces, there were a lot of boxes and everything. I don't know now, have you fixed that office? Because I would like us to go and visit that office. It is not secured, even not secured, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you. Onward, Goya.
Thanks, Chairperson. We understand and note the importance and the urgency of granting firearm amnesty with the aim to reduce crime. But indeed, we've got a number of questions that need to be answered before we can say we agree or we disagree. I'm not sure because I walked out for a few minutes. I'm not sure if I might be repeating some of the things, but I'm going to raise them anyway. The first issue that I want to check is in relation to the planning vis-a-vis the commencement date. I want to check if the entire planning phase is completed or is still going to be begun. Because I'm looking at the time that we are requested to investigate. For example, activating your detective investigators. Would you be able to tell us that no, we have them, they are ready. As soon as we granted that opportunity, we will. The other issue that I also have, which is a point of concern for me, it speaks to illegally possessed firearms. But again, on the draft letter, it says amnesty shall not apply to illegal firearms where documentary proof of previous owner cannot be produced. Now, it becomes illegal because someone stole it from someone or got it illegally. So the previous owner obviously won't be there. So are we saying those firearms must still remain in circulation because those people know that even if I can declare it, I won't be granted amnesty because I will have to say that was the firearm that I stole from Honorable Mita. And I cannot say that. So that's the challenge that is there. And also no indemnity for firearms used to commit crimes such as murder, robbery, and hijacking. Those are the firearms we want. Those are the firearms we want to be declared. So I think really there's more that needs to be dealt with here before we can say we agree or we don't agree. So I would request that at least we be provided with all the information so that we can know how do you deal with these guns that are used every day to hijack. Are we saying people must keep them? Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Dado.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chair. I'm not sure for whatever reason where I see it, I'm not confident that this that we are getting will work. And maybe it is because of the following reasons. One is that this process was to commence in 2017 and it could not be finalized due to administrative delays. And what doesn't come out clear is what are these administrative delays on such an important aspect of our lives? People are getting killed daily. Robbers using illegal weapons. It means that a lot of people are using illegal weapons to kill us, and we cannot really say in precision what is it that we are going to deal to do to quell the situation now. Now, I'm a member of parliament serving in this committee. It is for the first time I see that this amnesty is commencing within the next 3 weeks. What about an ordinary person in the street who is not exposed to this information? And for me, on such an important project, surely this unit of the SAPS should have embarked on a very, very rigorous campaign to ensure that every South African is aware that this amnesty will be available for a period of about 6 months, and they must take advantage of it. I'll tell you why I'm saying this, and I'm just saying it on record. As I was moving from one place to the other, I lost my firearm license. And I think it's 2 or 3 years back, I went to the clerks of police station to say I lost my firearm license. I still have a firearm with me. And they're talking about this amnesty saying that we must wait a bit, people must hand over their firearms, and they refer me to another police station. The very same people who were supposed to help me. I decided to go home. Where I sit, to be frankly, I put it on record. I have a firearm which is mine. But I don't know where the firearm license is. I've looked for it, and I'm at a point where I want to hand over, if it means handing over this firearm license, apply for a new one, or that I get an amnesty, that I'll get a new license. But where I am, I locked it very safe. I place it there, and given the current situation in my country, I'm just saying that one day if I'm attacked, I would use it. I would have no other option but to use it. But for now, I'm packing it. I'm not doing anything with it. And this kind of information is not getting explained to me and to other people on how that we have to go about doing it. And I think the point that Honorable Michalakis is making is very good. He say the majority of these people who are going to hand over their license are legal, lawful, law-abiding citizens of this country. They are the ones who are going to hand over the license. But what about these ones? And what systems and structures we put in place to ensure that in case that these illegal ones are not handed over, we go all out and hunt them so that they get arrested. My view is that this presentation before us is very, very much important. It is at the heart of what ought to be and what is it that we need to do as a country to ensure that at least the overwhelming majority of the firearms that are in our positions or in the positions of South Africans are legal and are lawful, and nobody is carrying unlawful licenses. I have a sense that I'm sure this unit of the SAPS must do more and better. I don't know what they said that they need to do to ensure that they address these issues, but where I am, I'm not yet convinced that we're making headway in terms of dealing with these particular issues. Just the last point, at a slide where it deals with risk and mitigation. They identify the risk. These are serious issues. And I just pray for it. God forbid us that the firearms are stolen and they continue to be stolen. Part of the problem is that they are continue to be stolen. And the SAPS 13 units, which are supposed to keep, you know, equipment and product and other things related to the state and theft as such. And my worry is that if this is not also safe, then it means we're still having a long way to go. Thanks, sir.
Thank you, Honorable Mfayel.
Yes, ma'am. When I grew up, we used to regard a police station as the safest place to be, the police station. Whatever chases you, you used to run to a police station because it's safe, but not anymore. There's one thing that keep on puzzling me. Police station as now, we regard as a place where most of our machines are kept. But only to find out that at the police station gate, there's a security guard with a donkey berry looking after those ammunition. To me, it doesn't make sense. That's why we find out that we get police station being robbed. So I just want to check with you as to how it happened. Maybe it lies with us as members of parliament. We don't make a good laws that's going to give you some direction as to how to look after your police stations. Because as we speak now, police stations are not safe at all. And you can't run to the police station for safe. What is the reason behind it?
Thank you. Honorable Seleko?
Chair, mine won't be long. I believe that there was amnesty phase before, you know, a process to go, and I would have loved to hear in terms of the successes of that particular process and if there was any failure, if there was any, you know, progress and improvement. And I don't want to repeat what other members have said in terms of the integrity of the SAPS members. And I just want to support what members are saying in terms of the integrity of the members by the own admission of the Minister of Police, who during our oral session, our oral question session, where he said, referring to the incident that was happening in Joburg, where they had a raid of trying to confiscate, you know, goods, you know, that are not in good standard. And those goods were taken to a storage, and the same member that actually confiscating these goods are the same members that were selling these goods. And we were talking about food here. And then I'm asking myself, now you want to, you know, we were talking about guns. What are the chances now that these members, you know, because they're SAPS members, of not actually repeating what they've done in Joburg? Thank you very much.
Honourable
Leader. That's it, forget about me. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair. Let's appreciate the presentation. And I must say, Chair, you know, maybe the proposal by the presenters is good, that we really need to fight for us to be safe in South Africa and make sure that we've got less guns. That's a very good initiative. And, you know, when I raised my hand, one of the things came to my mind. I thought when they do presentation, really their starting point would be the time when they did the same exercise and make convince us in terms of that exercise that they've conducted before of confiscating a gun, that this is what we managed to achieve. In terms of crimes committed through guns, we didn't get that from your presentation. I'm agreeing with the last speaker because it's one point that I was going to raise. Two, Chair, the question would be, is this going to happen across the provinces on the same day, you start on the same day? And if that the answer, Chair, is yes, we are from different provinces here. We understand very clear the conditions of our police station and also the safety of those police that are serving in our police station. Because if you talk about doing that as a program that will happen across the province, it means everyone will be aware that to those police stations that we know that they are not safe. Aren't you thinking that criminals will target those poor policemen with a view of stealing the same guns that you are referring to? You know, the issue of doing this kind of exercise, it needs a lot of work, let alone the issue of training. It starts with the police cell, your station itself, where you are going to keep this. How safe is this police station? So my view, it's in line with what my colleague next to me was saying. You come here now to say in 2 weeks' time, this is what you're going to do. We are not satisfied as this committee how ready you are in terms of doing this exercise. That's where my point is. I'm not convinced as a member of this committee that what you are presenting to us today, you are ready to do it in 3 weeks' time. Even in a month's time, if you like, and 3 months' time, because you've got such big challenges in your police stations across the country. Very few police stations are safe to do this kind of work. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable, is it a...
Yes, Chairperson, I forgot one. Is this a 2019 firearm amnesty or...
Is this a 2019 firearm amnesty or 2018? Because here you said 2018. Can you please correct this?
Yeah, they must correct it in their presentation, Jefferson. And my other question, if I remember correctly, before doing an amnesty, the committee must have the stakeholders' engagement, e.g. gun-free and other stakeholders, and hear their views. Have you done that? Because you can't say today, on the 1st of October, you are to eat an amnesty. How can it be? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Mola, and thank you, Honourable Members, for all the inputs. If I can maybe just raise a few issues as well. I think I just wanted to know, in terms of your communication, whether you also have some sort of centralized helpline or complaint line, you know, so that as members of the public encounter certain problems in terms of accessing certain police stations, that they can raise these issues, as well as reporting other problems that they encounter in this process. But also, I think a lot of my issues that I wanted to raise, members did raise, and these were around the capacity issues as well as the issues in the storage facilities, issues around the prevention of theft, around the ballistic testing and the time frames for these. As well as in terms of your firearm register, whether this is actually in place, is it centralized, is it electronic, that kind of information. And I think around the capacity of and training of people, members have already asked those questions. But I think as members from CERT, you can see that members of this committee are having many issues with this application. We're not saying that a firearm amnesty is unnecessary, and we do believe it is in the interest of the public. But it is clear that even within, given the history of what has been happening around the firearm amnesty, there is a strong need that the department builds in some kind of public trust. You know, so the assistance and whatever is required needs to be put in place so that if your systems and processes and whatever comes out of this process are not questioned by us as politicians nor by the public out there. As you can see, there's a number of outstanding information that members are raising, and it is obviously information that we also as a committee would require before we can even continue to consider this application. So my proposal is that you've listened to what our concerns are, and we've also listed the range of issues. But also given the fact that the commissioner, as well as the minister or deputy minister, are not also present, my proposal would be that you actually take on board the issues that we've raised, and we'll schedule another meeting with yourself, or as you provide us with relevant information, we will then have another session then to consider such an application. Okay, I didn't want you to go to try and respond to everything, because we would have still got to the same conclusion. So my proposal is that the next time you will submit information, I'm sure time frames will provide you with that, and then there can be a resubmission to the committee in relation to this amnesty application. Anu Mikolakis, do you want to add?
Chair, I just want clarity for my own sake. Sorry, I might misunderstand you. But in other words, before there's asked from this committee to approve any such amnesty, we will receive the replies to the questions that we've
yes,
asked.
Yes, you want all the relevant information.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, members from the South African Police Service, for attending this briefing session, and we hope to see you soon. Our members, our meeting is not over, but I'm suggesting we take a 5-minute break, a leg stretch, body break, and come back in 5 minutes.